This Week with Ann Carrick and Vincent Caprio. It's what you're talking about this week.
Welcome back to This Week with Ann Carrick and Vincent Caprio. Vincent is on the phone. I'm in the studio. And also in the studio with me now, Joe DeFilippo from DeFilippo and Russo. And Joe, nice for you to be here tonight.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. And I know you were listening to our call-in guest there who was talking about some of the challenges that all businesses probably face, and you were saying that you ran into some of those yourself when you started your own business.
Yes.
A few years back.
Yes. When I broke off from a bigger, larger firm in 2006, faced the same challenges that anybody else does when they start a business. You come in with a certain amount of business, and you go into the bank, and they give you a stack of huge papers to fill out and say, if you want to get any money from us, you better fill out all these. And the regulations were a little easier back in 2006, I have to say, and I was able to secure a loan. I got to tell you right now, working with businesses today, trying to do this, and really since 2008, if I tried to do it today, there's no way I would have gotten a loan to start my business.
In other words, you wouldn't be approved today for the same thing you got 5 years
not.
Ago.
No.
Just because of the change in the climate.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you something else that's radically changed is that 10 years ago, if you had a tax ID number, whether it was a partnership or a sole proprietor, you could walk into a bank and open a bank account. And Joe knows this from his clients. With the change with the Patriot Act after 2001, if you get a tax ID number for a partnership or a corporation, you have to come in with all your documentation for the bank to open a business bank account.
Oh,
whereas
absolutely.
Years ago, like I said, you could walk in with a tax ID number from the IRS and open an account.
And that was it.
Yes. Yeah. And Joe, I was going to ask you this question. You know, with the coming, the Internal Revenue Service and the state has been clamping down on contractors for years. And I have many friends that are self-employed and they file a Schedule C. And I've told them for years, you really just should incorporate. How do you feel about incorporations?
I think it's definitely necessary today. It's not going to completely insulate you from the issues that you may face from the IRS or the state, but it will help you. And you're absolutely right, Vincent. I've had a huge upswing in the last few years of the state going after small companies where instead of hiring employees, they're using independent contractors, and the state is not getting their piece, and they want to get their piece, so they really scrutinize, and this gets back to reading the labor regulations, which Tim from Fabricare was talking about before. There's some very stringent guidelines in how you fit in to whether you're an independent contractor or you're an employee, and a lot of it has to do with what you were talking about before, if you have control over somebody, if you can control what they do, the times they work, and all of that, more than likely they're an employee. If you don't have control over that, then you have a good argument for them being an independent contractor. Just paying somebody as an independent contractor doesn't qualify them, and the IRS and the state revenue service is not going to just because you delineate that you pay somebody as an independent contractor, that's not going to fly with both of those agencies. They want to err on the side of, they would rather have the person be an employee because then they get more of their piece.
But if that person is incorporated, it's not an issue.
Well, but I think the first thing I was going to ask is, when you say the state's not getting their piece because they're not an employee, so they're not getting what would normally be withheld?
No, or they're not getting Department of Employment, the unemployment portion.
Right, but
yes.
I'm saying, but obviously they're still getting taxes if that person is self-employed. It's not like they're just earning money, and well, if they're not reporting it, that's a whole other story.
Right.
But in other words, they're still paying taxes on their income. It's all the withholdings, like he was saying, for Social Security, et cetera, that they're not getting, and that's what they want. So if the person incorporates, how is that different for the company I mean, they're either an employee or they're not. And if they're not, why is it a benefit to the independent contractor to be incorporated instead of just being, you know, a freelance, self-employed, whatever you want to call it?
I can tell you what we tell all of our clients that do independent contracting work for anybody else. And I'll use an example, a carpet installer. If you're doing work for, if there's a company that goes out and gets the a retail establishment that goes out and sells the, let's say they sell the carpet or they sell the wood, and then that business goes and they hire somebody to install the carpet or the wood floor in somebody's house. That person's an independent contractor. In the old days, that person would just be an independent contractor and would be John Smith independent. You know, he would just get paid as John Smith. We've encouraged people like that to now incorporate or become an LLC because it protects them. It insulates them from some of the issues that just being a sole proprietor or being John Smith would present to them. And at the same time, it also helps to insulate and it helps the company that's actually hiring them to also have some an entity to pay and an entity to also share some of the liability with, if there is liability type of situations.
Right, and that's the reason why I say to everybody they should incorporate if they're going to continue on, because corporations don't send 1099s to corporations. So in that scenario Joe mentioned, in the first scenario, when the corporation hired the installer, if he was a contractor, the corporation is required to send a 1099. Corporation to corporation, there is no 1099.
Well, they just pay the bill.
Right. But
that's correct.
They do not have to file a 1099. There's no such thing as a 1099 from corporation to corporation. And then, and we just talk about the Department of Labor. This is the money that they're always looking for from contractors. If they say they break businesses down and they say these aren't really contractors, they're employees, then the Department of Labor wants their money for unemployment. Explain that, Joe.
Well, before we explain it, I just want to, I think we're confusing people because we're jumping around, because we're talking about, you know, a company that is definitely a company, and whether somebody is an employee or they're a contractor. You know, and then we're talking about the contractor themselves. You know, are they just an independent contractor, or should they become a corporation? You know, and the state and all federal, all governments, state, federal, local, whatever, they all want their money. That we all know that. that's how the whole government runs. They want your money so that they can keep doing what they want to do. You know, but we may be confusing people because we're asking specific issues about different things, which may be a little off of running your own business. But go ahead and answer, but see, just try if we make sure we can clarify what we're talking about there, because we've got three or four issues kind of blended together.
To address the first issue, I think it's a very good practice that if you're the independent contractor, that you incorporate or you become an LLC to help you with liability situations, and it also helps you with some of the IRS and state tax issues that you'll have to confront.
Is that more true, though, if you're actually doing something where you're in somebody else's home or on their property? I mean, like a service-oriented, self-employed, independent contractor, where they're working out of their own home doing business-type work, but they're not in somebody else's location. Is it still the same for them? Or?
I would think it's a little more needed when you're in the service industry and you're going out and you're servicing the public, because
right.
Then you open yourself up to
a lot of liability.
Mm-hmm. But I wanted to address also the issue where the state is really stepping in and really catching people on this independent contractor issue is in the workers' comp area, because what's happening is, let's say, for example, you have an independent contractor and they're doing work for you, and at some point they get injured doing work for you. Using those terms in more of the generic term, not in the strict legal way. Do they have their own workers' comp? If they don't have their own workers' comp, where does it go to? Or is the company that's hired out that independent contractor, are they carrying them on their workers' comp? And this is where they're getting caught a lot, and this is where a lot of audits are happening from the state, is they're auditing the workers' comp part of it and saying, you know what, this person's not an independent contractor. You should be carrying them on your workers' comp. You owe X amount of dollars for workers' comp. And this is not only the state doing this, but guess who's also doing it? The insurance industry. Another agency that has their hands out a lot. They want to...
Well, because if I'm an independent contractor and I'm doing independent work for you and you're some other company and I get hurt, if I really should be an employee, then my insurance company says, well, why are we paying this claim? You're working for them. They should be paying that claim. And you as the company, your legal team and your insurance is saying, they're not an employee. They're an independent contractor. We're not paying that bill.
Absolutely.
And so nobody wants to pay the bill.
And then the lawyer sues everybody.
Right. Everybody sues everybody, and then nobody has any money.
And that's exactly what happens.
Okay. We have a call also from
But Brett. I just want to say, I believe that anyone that has their own business should be incorporated.
And I echo that.
Well, say that again, Joe.
I definitely echo that.
Yes. And it confuses people, but if you're in your own business, you should incorporate.
Okay, before I take the phone call, Joe, in 30 seconds, why should an independent contractor incorporate? Because there's expense to that, and then there's follow-on expenses to being a corporation instead of being an independent contractor.
You don't necessarily, if you can incorporate, I think, what I am including in that is becoming an LLC or something where expenses might be less. I think, one, it helps you with your liability issues. Two, it can also help you with tax, IRS, or government, federal and state tax issues.
So that you'd be better off as far as paying less taxes than you would if you're an independent contractor?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that actually goes right to our question. Greg from Stratford. Greg, I understand you have a question about LLCs and Social Security, correct?
Yeah, well, I have two questions. First of all, on this statement before that the government wants, you know, their money, it's my understanding, and because I'm an LLC, is that I pay both the employer's part of the Social Security, and if I was an employee, I would pay half my Social Security, the company would pay the rest. As an LLC, I'm paying both those portions. That's my understanding.
Your understanding is correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Then the other question I have is, and I think you might have just mentioned it a little bit, I am an LLC, and I had someone tell me that, you know, my accountant said, why did you make yourself an LLC? And I said to him, and this is why I did it, I heard that that protects, like, for example, if I do something wrong in my business, that they can't take my house or go against me, my personal assets. Is that true or not?
That's a very, very complicated and tricky question, because there's something that all lawyers talk about always is piercing the corporate veil. And that's a term that everybody's going to look, anybody that brings a lawsuit is always trying to follow the money.
If you have the money and your LLC is poor, they're going after you anyway.
Absolutely, and they're going to try to pierce that. Now,
let me just interrupt for a second. I heard from someone else that there's something called, is it a PC? That protects you better. I think doctors are PCs.
Doctors, law firms, accountants can all be PCs, professional corporations.
And does that protect me more if I wanted to change from an LLC?
It's really six and a half dozen of an. I mean, there's different protections that you get from each of them.
So there's good and bad for each.
Yeah, for being an Inc., for being an LLC, for being a PC. There's all different advantages and disadvantages.
Okay. We are going to take a break soon, but I also wanted to talk about something. I know we spoke about it ahead of time, which is we keep talking about small businesses. And when we say small business, most people think, you know, maybe less than 50 employees, you know, maybe one or two locations. But the legal definition from the government standpoint of a small business really includes many more things than that and much larger than what we would consider to be small.
As
we
a
would
matter of fact, the Department of Commerce defines small business as 200 million
okay.
and below.
And Vincent is absolutely correct about that. And
yep.
We don't, I mean, small business, the people that walk in my office and most professionals' offices are the guy who, or the woman that owns a liquor store or a bakery or a pool maintenance company, restaurant. Those are small businesses to me. And to me, in my opinion, those are the businesses that the government is not helping at all in these times. And those are the businesses that need the most help right now. And they're being left behind completely. Because if you go through any of the regulations or any of the bills that are pending, there's nothing to help those people. More of the bills are to help what we just talked about, the $200 million businesses. But who's helping the ma and pa? Nobody.
Right.
Right. And a lot of those, they've just closed shop. I mean, I know I look around. I already said I was in Westport, but where there's a plethora of restaurants and bakeries and businesses and, you know, that have been there for a long time, have always had steady traffic. You know, there's a restaurant near me that there used to be a line out the door around half the building. And the next day, poof, it was just gone. And I had the feeling that their lease probably came up. They didn't own that building. And they just said, you know what, we're cutting our losses. We're getting out of here because they could see the handwriting on the wall. The economy wasn't so good. Right. And rather than sign a new lease and be bound for some number of years more, they thought, you know what, let's take our money and run.
And the vendor bills are piling up in the...
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know them, so I don't know how their business was doing. But I had the feeling it was one of those things where they're this smaller business that we all think of as a small business. And they just said, you know, in the current climate, we're not putting ourselves out there with a long-term risk like that, where now we're going to owe these people for a long time.
And it goes back to where you can't get capital to bridge the gap, because if you could get some capital to carry you for the next couple of years, more of these businesses would be able to stay open. There's not capital that they can get, so they have no alternative. And we're talking some businesses that have been open, passed down through generations, 45 years. I mean, you see businesses closing all over that are third generation businesses, and that's a shame.
Right, and it's not because they're not doing a good job of running
or whatever.
They just, because they can't get capital even to make improvements.
Right.
You know, if you have a business that's been around for 10 years, depending on what it is, like you were talking about bakeries or restaurants, they probably need some new things in the kitchen.
Yep.
You know,
they need capital equipment.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They need capital equipment, and if they can't get a loan to go out and buy what they need, then they can't stay in business because they can't continue to run their business without that equipment, and they can't get the money to replace it, you know, where if they replaced it, they would be making more money and they'd still be in business. And, you know, that's the whole point, is that's why people loan money.
I hope we haven't thoroughly depressed everybody. Because there are good things.
You have the freedom of owning it.
Say what? You have the freedom of owning it?
Yeah. I mean, you're not working for someone else that's incompetent.
Right.
I mean, I worked in corporations for 25 years, and 50% of my bosses were completely incompetent.
Well, and that's something that we'll probably do another show and look and talk more to business owners and ones that have been successful who are still in business. And I think if you ask them, would you go back to work for somebody else? They say no. Or it would have to be such an outstanding opportunity, and probably with some sort of a contract with all sorts of stipulations on what they are going and not going to do. But there's no way they're leaving the luxury of owning their own business. I mean, there's good and bad to both of that. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back, and Joe's going to...